Hey, well, good evening. So excited to see all the volunteers here tonight. Tonight we kick off a brand new series, and I'm really excited about that. And I don't know if you have a good sense of direction or a bad sense of direction, but I have an awful sense of direction. I would get lost going everywhere that I haven't been at least 100 times. Like, my natural inclination when I have to pick and I don't have something telling me where to go is to go left. And if you just go left every time, you end up going in a circle. I think I might have missed my calling to be a NASCAR driver. I would have been great at that. I just could have kept going in circles. I am not great at direction at all. I'm awful with it. And that's why I thank God for GPS. How many of you have GPS in your car or use it on your phone? GPS is amazing. I love GPS because here's how GPS works. You want to get to a certain destination. You just type in the address in your GPS, and it tells you which route to go. And in fact, some GPSs, you can actually program in there and tell them like specific routes you want to take. If you want to avoid tolls, you can type that in there and it'll avoid tolls. If you want to take the fastest route, the most direct route, sometimes some GPSs even tell you if there's traffic a certain route, and it'll like reroute you to like a faster route. I absolutely love GPS. But even with GPS, sometimes I take a wrong turn. It should be impossible, but sometimes it tells me, like, I'm upcoming on a turn, and I think it's telling me to turn right away, and I take that turn, and then this little cute voice says, recalculating route, recalculating route. And even when if I try to get lost, it recalculates the route to get me back in the direction that I'm supposed to go in. I love GPS. Now, some of you won't remember life before GPS, but I want to show you what life was like before GPS. People actually had to pull out these things, and I think the only place you can get them now is in a museum. This is something called a map, okay? This is something that you might have learned of in history class. No one uses these anymore, but these things were incredible. Before GPS, if you went on a journey, you actually had to unfold this thing. Just give me a second. This map is just of Hampton Newport News. Look how big that is. Just of Hampton Newport News. You would have to unfold this thing, and then like if you were like us, we would take like a highlighter to it, and we would find the route that we were going to go on our journey, and we would highlight it out, and like we would figure this is where we're going to go. But you had to keep this handy, because if you got lost, this was your only hope of getting found again. And here's the thing about the map. Some of you remember this. If you didn't have a co-pilot, you were like screwed, like because you had to like pull over to the side of the road. You couldn't read it. It's so big, you couldn't read it without like stopping your car or like at least wrecking. And even if you had a co-pilot, like oftentimes you were like tempted to wreck because it took over your whole windshield. Even for them to hold it, it like blocked your view. This thing is massive. And this is how we got direction. Now, one other thing that was really interesting about the map, that if you're too young to remember this, you won't remember how frustrating this was. Once you unfolded a map, it was impossible to fold back. I'm pretty sure the inventor of folding maps was a middle school girl. Remember in middle school, like a girl would give you a note, and it was like an origami, and you would unfold it and then like try to get it back to be like the swan or the triangle or whatever they did, and it's like, it's impossible. Once it's unfolded for me, that's the way it's... This is how your map stayed. Like once you got to your destination, you just crammed this in the glove box, and it was just in a ball, and that's how you figured out where to go. Now, I don't know anyone, absolutely anyone, that goes on a journey and doesn't look at some type of map or doesn't type something in the GPS and say, this is where I want to go and it's going to help me get there. I don't know anyone that says, hey, we're going to go on vacation in Texas. We're just going to drive. Like, we're just going to see where it takes us. We're just going to guess. Like, people figure out where they're going to go. And it's awesome because it helps you not to get lost. And I often think about life, and I often just wish that life came with GPS. I often wish that when I was faced with a decision, I could just type in the decision in my GPS. I have two options for jobs. Both of them seem pretty good. I don't know which direction to take. Let me just type it in, and the life GPS just points me in the right direction. Or maybe you're like wrestling with something about maybe you want to get married, or you're wanting to move, or you're wanting to change jobs, or go back to school, or you're in high school and you're trying to pick which college to go to. Wouldn't it be awesome just to type in your GPS? This is my situation, this is the deal I'm struggling with, and it would just tell you, this is the route that you go. And then, if you had a life GPS, it would be like if you're making decisions and you're trying to follow it along, and then you take like a wrong turn somewhere, you'd hear this little cute voice that would say, recalculating route, recalculating route. And it'd be like, okay, I need to not go that job, I need to go take the other job. Wouldn't it be awesome? The problem is that life doesn't come with GPS. In fact, oftentimes in life, I wish that I could just hear God's voice, just tell me, this is where you need to go. But it happens very rarely. I think that when you're faced with a decision, the first place you should go is the Bible and see, does the Bible answer this question? Does the Bible tell me what to do or what not to do in this situation? But there's lots of situations that we face that the Bible is silent on. The Bible doesn't tell you what job to take. The Bible doesn't tell you who you should marry. The Bible doesn't tell you which college you should choose. It doesn't tell you if you should go back to school. It doesn't tell you if you should change jobs. It doesn't tell you if you should pursue that dream that you've been just like dreaming about for years. The Bible is silent on that. So in those moments, it would be awesome to have some voice that would just say, this is what you have to do. And I wish that I could stand before you and tell you that I'm the type of person that hears from God on a regular basis, but I don't. In fact, there's only been a few times in my life where I've heard that still small voice. And when I say still small voice, I mean that still small voice that is louder than the other voices in my head. I know that makes me sound crazy, but if you've ever experienced it, you know what I'm talking about. It's like you hear this whisper and it just has a different tone than the other normal voices that are in your head. There's been a few instances where I heard that voice. When I was in high school, I was a junior in high school, and we were at a summer camp, and it was the worst summer camp that I'd ever been to. I didn't listen to a single word that the camp pastor said. I didn't pay attention at all. Like, I literally zoned out for the hour-long message that he gave, and I can't tell you one thing that he said. I can't even tell you one verse that he read. But on the very last night, for some reason, at the very end of his talk, I don't remember what the talk was about. I didn't pay attention. I don't know what the scriptures were. But at the very end of his talk, he said, some of you are being called to full-time ministry. And if you're being called to full-time ministry, I want you to stand up right now from your seat and come forward. And when he said that, I zoned in, and I don't know why. And as soon as I zoned in, I heard that still small voice that was louder than the other voices in my head. And it said, this is what you're going to do with the rest of your life. And I said, I'm not going to do that. And in fact, I'm not exaggerating, I'm not making this up. As a junior in high school, I literally gripped the side of my chair and I held on. I'm like, you're not moving me, I'm not going up there. Because at the time, I wanted to work at ESPN. That was my dream. Like, I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. I wanted to come up with these catchphrases and like say them after like games. And like, I wanted to be on TV. I did not want to go into ministry at all. And in fact, for a full year, I wrestled with that still small voice. It only said it to me once, but I just couldn't shake it. And I just kept wrestling with it, and I kept going back to it. And finally, in my senior year, I had an opportunity to speak to my youth group. And we had a pretty large youth group. There was a couple hundred students there, and I got to speak to them. And what I'm about to tell you, I don't recommend doing. I'm not even sure this is biblical. I was very young. I was only a senior in high school. But before I got up to speak, I said to God, I said, God, here's the deal. If I speak and this is a failure, I'm pursuing ESPN. But if I speak and I connect with the students, then I know that that voice that I heard was right. Well, I was a senior in high school. I was 18 years old, and I've been in ministry ever since. A few years later, I was in college, and I was at a summer camp, and this summer camp was amazing. This summer camp I got a lot out of, and the speaker was really good. And I was a youth pastor, and I had brought a group of students to go to this camp, and it was in Tennessee. And we were sitting there, and after the session, it was just one of those moments. Like, I don't know if you ever sat in a church service where it was just like, you just didn't want to move. Like, it was over, but it was just like, I just got to keep pondering what I just heard. And I was sitting in my seat, and I was the only one there. Everyone else had gone off to other activities, and I just kind of was sitting there and just reflecting on what I heard. And I don't know what inspired this. I don't know if I was just like a single person desperately desiring marriage. I don't know what was going on in my mind. But for some reason, during that reflection, I just said, God, I don't want to put you in a box, but I would love to know who I'm going to marry by next summer coming back to this camp. I don't know why I said it. I don't know why I prayed it. God's never answered prayers like that before, but for some reason, at that moment, as soon as I said that, I heard that little, still, small voice that was louder than the other voices in my head, and it said, Monica. And my response at first was like, I'm not going to marry Monica. See, Monica and I were great friends. We were really good friends. And a little over a year earlier, we had dated for like a week, and I thought that in that week, like, I knew everything I needed to know, and I was just like, this isn't the right path. Like, I need to find someone else. And so in my mind, that door was closed. And so when I heard that still small voice, it wasn't like there was anything wrong with Monica. It was just like, no, like you're wrong. That voice is not right. We've already tried that. But I couldn't shake that still small voice. And for the next couple of months, I just kept praying, and like something started happening. My heart started being drawn to Monica. And I remember that summer, she went on vacation, and it was like, why do I miss her so much? Like, she was gone like a week, and like, midway through the week, I was just like, man, this is awful. I feel like disgusting with her not being here. And like, I just want to be around her. I just want to hang out with her. And by October of that year, just a few months after we went to that camp, we started dating. And then by New Year's of that year, we were engaged. Because I knew, like, that still small voice, it was louder than the other voices in my head. But that brings me to another time where I feel like I heard from God. A year later, after that moment, or that following summer, I was leaving a college Bible study in Farmville, Virginia. Yes, it is a real place. No, it's not based off the Facebook game. And I went to this college Bible study, and as I was leaving, I was driving down this really, really dark road. There were no streetlights anywhere. I had about a 15-minute drive back to the country farmhouse that I stayed with a family at. And as I was driving, I just felt this like sense that I needed to turn off my music in my car and just sit and just talk to God. And I don't know why. So I have no idea what led me to do that, except it was a God thing. And so I turned off my music. And as I was driving down, I heard that still small voice that was louder than the other voices in my head. And it simply said, "What would it be like to work with Stu Hodges again?" Now, some of you know Stu, but some of you may not know the story. When I was 18 years old and I felt called to ministry, Stu was the first person to hire me, and he hired me as an intern, and I worked with him for 2 years. And after that, then I transferred and went up to Liberty University, and Stu and I, we were friends, but it's not like we talked a lot. We didn't talk on a weekly, monthly basis. We kind of lost touch. I was in Lynchburg doing my thing. He was in Hampton doing his thing. I hadn't thought of him for a long time, and so when I heard that, I was like, that is the weirdest thought to have. I pull into the driveway of this country house, and I walk inside the house, and the family that lives there, they say, "Oh, we thought that was you. It's glad it's you. You have a phone call." I said, "Okay, who is it?" And they said, "Stu Hodges." And I, like, just almost passed out. Like, this is weird. This stuff doesn't happen to me. So I went, and I picked up the telephone, and I said, "Hello," and it was Stu. And Stu said, "Hey, I don't know if you would be interested in this, but I want to offer you a job to be the assistant minister of students at Liberty Baptist." And I was like, okay, this is just freaky, like, you'll never believe what happened to me. Like, just a few minutes ago, I was driving on the road, and I heard the still small voice, and it said, "What would it be like to work with Stu? Like, I got to pray about this." And so I got really excited about it, and I went and I talked to Monica, because we were engaged at the time, and I said, "Hey, I really feel like God might be leading us to take a job in Hampton." And her response was, "Uh-uh, no." Her family, and not her literal family, like her church family, the one that really had helped her see what it meant to have a relationship with God, was in Farmville, Virginia, and she didn't want to leave. She wanted to stay there and be a part of that. And so we had to pray and wrestle with it. And eventually we just couldn't shake it and said, okay, this is God's plan for us. Well, the following year, we were living in Hampton at the time. And I wasn't looking to leave anywhere. I wasn't looking to go anywhere. But for 7 days in a row, when I would open up my Bible to have my quiet time, before I would read a single word of the Bible, I would hear this still small voice that was louder than the other voices in my head. And it would simply say, "You need to pray about Texas." And I didn't know what I had to pray about Texas. I didn't know if they were about to, like, leave America and create war, like, for the rest of the states. I didn't know if they were going to be bombed. I didn't know if they were going to have bad weather. I didn't know if I was just supposed to pray, "God bless Texas." I had no idea what I was supposed to pray. But, like, every morning for 7 days in a row, I would open my Bible and, like, I would hear this voice, "You need to pray about Texas." It was so consistent that I finally walked into the bedroom one morning. I said, "Monica, we got to start praying about Texas. I can't shake this. I don't know what we're supposed to pray about, but we're just supposed to pray about Texas." Over the next couple of months, I started having this desire to go to seminary and to get my master's degree. And I combined those kind of feelings of just wanting to get my school done with this thought about praying for Texas. And so I applied to go to seminary, and without ever seeing our school, without ever visiting Texas, we had no family, we had no jobs, we had no friends there, we packed up and we moved everything from Hampton, Virginia to Fort Worth, Texas. The very first time that we saw my school was when we pulled up with the U-Haul, and it was like, this is it, this is where we're going to spend the next couple of years. But it was that still, small voice that was louder than the other voices in my head. Now, I tell you those stories, and I love those stories. In fact, I hold on to those stories, but those stories aren't the norm for me. In fact, I just told you a few stories, but I'm 34 years old, and that's like all I got. This doesn't happen to me on a weekly basis. This doesn't happen on a monthly basis. In fact, when I was planning Next Level Church and when I was dreaming about this and I just had this sense that I need to do something different and I felt like I need to plan a church, I begged God to give me that still small voice. And I would pray to God often. I was like, "God, just say something. Just say yes or no. That's all you have to say. Or if it's yes, tell me where to go. Just, I'll go to Indiana if you want me to go to Indiana." And I don't know why I always prayed about Indiana. Like, I have no, like, family there. I have no reason to pray about Indiana, but I was always telling God, "God, if you want me to go to Indiana," like it's Africa or like something hard, like Indiana is like pretty civilized, I think. But it was like, "God, even if you want me to go to Indiana, I'll go to the godforsaken parts of the world called Indiana. I'll do that for you. Just tell me where you want me to go." And I never heard that still small voice. So I had these feelings inside, but it was like, "God, I just need you to speak," and I heard nothing. Tonight, what I want to do is I want to go through a passage of Scripture that I think is going to speak to you if you've ever been in one of those instances. Maybe tonight you're wrestling with something, and maybe you're like, I don't know what to do. I have two opportunities. Do I take this job or do I take that job? Or maybe you're wrestling with, I have this dream inside of me, and it's just been boiling for a long time, but it means I'm going to have to quit everything I know, and like it's a huge risk, and I'm really scared. I don't know if that's what I should do. Maybe you're here tonight and you're like, okay, I really want to get married. I have this desire inside of me. I want to get married. Like, God just got to provide. And if that's you, I think tonight's message is going to speak to you. But I want to give you a challenge before we get into the Scripture. Tonight, if you're here and you're not wrestling with something, it's going to be very easy for you to tell yourself, oh, I don't have to pay attention to this. Because right now I'm not dealing with one of those big God-sized things, one of those big moments. But I want to just challenge you, take some notes. Put this in your mind, because one day, it may not be today, it may be next year, it may be 5 years, it may be 10 years, but at some point in your life, you're going to deal with a situation, and you're going to want God to speak to you, and God's going to be silent. And in that moment, you're going to say, ah, why didn't I write something down? So I just want to challenge you, just if you're not dealing with this, make sure you pay attention anyway, because I think that God has a word for us tonight. Let's dive in now to our verse for the night. It comes from 1 Kings 19, and it starts off by saying, now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, may the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them. Now let me give you a little bit of context. In this brief scripture, we're introduced to three people. We're introduced to Ahab, Jezebel, and Elijah. Ahab was the king over the northern section of Israel. Israel was split into two kingdoms at this point. It was like the main kingdom of Israel. He was like God's king. He was supposed to be the one that was leading Israel to follow after God, but he had led Israel to follow all these pagan gods. And the main reason he did that is because he was married to this lady named Jezebel, and Jezebel wore the pants in the family. You know what I'm saying? She made all the decisions. When she said jump, he said how high. And so Jezebel was leading this nation to worship these pagan gods. And this was a big deal because Israel was supposed to be God's chosen nation. They were supposed to be the nation that pointed the rest of the world towards God. And think about that. Think about that. God's chosen people are now not worshiping God, the one that rescued them from slavery and gave them this land. They're worshiping these pagan, like man-made gods. And there's this prophet by the name of Elijah, and Elijah just feels called by God. He just has this sense that this is wrong. And so he calls out Jezebel and all these prophets, and he has this like battle with them. It's epic. If you haven't read it, you need to go to 1 Kings and read this battle, because it's intense. Elijah calls out all the prophets, and this is the challenge. He says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to dig these trenches, and we're going to put like a sacrifice on the trenches, and then we're going to pray to our God. I'm going to pray to my God, you're going to pray to your gods. And we're going to ask that our God rain fire down from heaven and consume the altar. And so he lets these pagan gods, these pagan prophets go first. And so they start praying. And if you ever read the story, like Elijah is not confident. He's cocky. Like he talks junk to them. Like they're sitting there like, and they pray for a long time. And then he says to them, maybe your gods are asleep. And he says, like, maybe they're just busy doing something. And the literal translation, if you go back to the literal translation it was written in, what he was really saying to them is, maybe your gods are going to the bathroom. Like, maybe they're dropping a deuce and they're not paying attention to you. And so when he says that to them, they get, like, really panicked and they start cutting themselves and they start, like, pouring blood on this altar and they're, like, crying out and they're, like, just rain fire down. And after hours and hours and hours, their gods don't answer. And so finally, it's Elijah's turn. Elijah steps up, and he is so cocky that he actually pours water on top of his altar. Not something you want to do if you want a fire to start. He pours the water on, and then he prays to God, and the one true God rains fire down from heaven, consumes the altar, and then the people turn back to God. And it's this like amazing story. And then Elijah, with the momentum of this God-type thing, he goes and he kills all these false prophets with the sword. It's like this awesome, like amazing thing. And so Ahab gets word of this, and he goes back to his wife Jezebel. And he says, hey, Elijah has killed all of our prophets. And Jezebel says, may the gods deal with me ever so severely if by this time tomorrow Elijah is not dead. Now let's pick up from there and see what happens next to Elijah. Elijah was afraid, and he ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom brush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. I've had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors. Now, I absolutely love this verse for us, but I hate it for Elijah. The reason I hate it for Elijah is here's this amazing man of God who has just done this miracle that none of us have ever experienced. We would never forget if we had something like what happened to him happen to us. And he has this amazing thing happen, and then he gets word that Jezebel says, "May the gods deal with me ever so severely if by tomorrow you're not dead." These are the same gods that he just taunted and said, "Hey, they're going to the bathroom. They're too busy to help you." These are the same gods that he was like really confident that his God could like overcome. But now because Jezebel's thrown this threat out, he becomes afraid. And he runs for his life. And he goes and he sits down under a tree and he says, "God, this is too big for me. Would you just take my life?" Now I hate this verse for Elijah, but I love it for us. Because if Elijah was just the guy that called down fire from heaven and like had this great victory, none of us in this room could relate to him. But I think all of us can relate to someone who's like, "Man, God, my problems are too big for me. This situation, this thing that I'm dealing with, it's too heavy." In fact, I bet most of us have had some type of moment in our life where we just said, "God, can you just get me out of this? Would you just take my life? I don't know what to do. This is too big. Just end it." Elijah became afraid. And here's the deal. I often meet with people and they tell me, they say, "Hey, I just want to hear God speak. I just want God to tell me like where to go. I just want God to give me an answer." And the truth of the matter is, if you really look to the heart of that question, people really don't care what God has to say. That question, I know what they're saying, but if you really talk to them, they're really not concerned about what God has to say. How do I know this? Because God's already given us a lot of truths in the Bible, and most of us struggle to obey Him. Like, God has given us a lot of things. Like, God's given us instructions. God says that we should flee sexual immorality. And yet, how many Christians fled sexual immorality before they were married? Most Christians struggled with it or crossed the line. God told us that we shouldn't gossip. And yet, how many Christians gossip on a weekly basis? God tells us, do not lie. In fact, He says He hates liars. And yet, how many times have we told a lie? God says things that like, when someone strikes you, when someone hurts you, you are to turn the other cheek and offer them their other cheek. And yet, when someone hurts you, what's your natural response? God's already told you what to do. He's already given you a command, and yet most of us don't like that. Jesus said one time that if you're at the altar and you're worshiping God and you have a gift for God and it dawns on you that somebody has a problem with you, you are to leave your gift at the altar and go make it right with them. Translation, if you're worshiping God in a church service and your hands are raised and you're singing and all of a sudden it dawns on you that somebody has a problem with you, you are to leave the church service and go fix it with them. And how many church services have we sat through knowing that we've wronged someone or that someone's upset with us and we did nothing about it? See, God's already spoke, and the truth is we don't like to hear from God. I don't know if you caught this, but in the four examples that I gave, in every instance, either me or someone else was saying, uh-uh. God spoke and said in that still small voice that was louder than the other voices, He said, "This is what you should do," or "This is a hint," and the first thing was just like, "No, I don't know. Let me pray about it. I don't know if this is what I'm supposed to do. Like, is that really your voice?" None of you in here like to be told what to do. I know this. Because none of you obey the speed limits. None of you. When you're driving down 64 and it says it's only 55 miles an hour, none of you drive 55. None of you do. Maybe you do, and don't tell me afterwards because you're blowing my theory. But I don't think any of you drive 55. In fact, when I drive 65 on 64, I'm getting like past, like people are flying past me. Nobody enjoys like somebody to say, "This is what you're supposed to do." In fact, let's just make it a little bit more personal. I just have a theory that you guys like me. I think. I'm like 95% confident that you like me. You're pretty friendly to me. You shake my hand. Sometimes you laugh at my jokes. You at least act like you pay attention to the sermons. I think you guys like me. But you know what would make you really mad at me? I guarantee, you can deny this, but I guarantee it would make you really mad. If next week when you came in, I stood at the back doors and I said, "You can't sit in that same seat that you sit in every week at church." Some of you would get really mad at me. I don't know if you know this or not, but we don't have assigned seating at Next Level Church. But some of you sit in the exact same section. In fact, there are some weeks, if they ever were to move seats, it would totally throw me off. Like I would think they were missing. And then if I saw them somewhere else, it would be just like, "What are you doing over there?" In fact, you guys are in the volunteer service. It's even worse in the 6 p.m. service. In the 6 p.m. service, the exact same people sit in this section, and the exact same people sit in this section, and the same couple people sit in the front row right there, and like they don't move every week. No one's ever told them to like sit there. And I guarantee, even though they like me right now, if I were to tell them, okay, all you people in the left section, you need to move over and sit in the right section, they would be mad. Like, they would send me dirty emails, they would like want to cuss me out, like simply because I told them where to sit. Some of you are not smiling right now because you know you're upset with me, just even thinking about me telling you where to sit. We don't like to be told what to do. And yet when it comes to God, we say, oh God, if you would just speak to me, if you would just tell me to go here, to go there, I would do it. But the truth of the matter is, we don't care that much about what God says to us. Really, when we're saying that question, really we're just revealing that we're afraid. We're afraid to take a risk. We're afraid to step out and do this because we might be a failure. Someone might laugh at us, or we may not be successful. We may not have all the answers, and so we just become afraid. And we become afraid, and that's why I love this verse, because I can relate to Elijah. I can relate to a fear where I just say, man, this is too big for me. I told you at the beginning of this talk that I never heard that still small voice from God that said, you need to start a church. I had this sense inside of me, but I wrestled with it for a good year and a half, almost 2 years, where I just did nothing. And like I really struggled with it. I kept saying, like, God, come on, I know that like I'm feeling this like discontent. I know that I'm feeling like I'm supposed to be doing something, but I just don't want to step out. What if I step out and I lose insurance? What if I step out and I have no money to provide for my family? What if I step out and it's a failure? And if I step out in my like area, in the area that I've grown up in, then everyone that knows me is gonna know that I failed. And like I was afraid, I was scared. In the summer, before we started Next Level Church, I met with a guy by the name of Clayton King. And Clayton is actually my son Hayden. His middle name is Clayton, and it's named after this guy. And I'll tell you the story at some point, but we don't have time tonight. But this guy is he's a youth evangelist. He has his own camp that I took students to for years. And he's a great speaker, and he's written multiple books. And that summer at camp, I said, hey, Clayton, I know you're a busy guy, but would you have a few minutes just to talk to me? And we went out and we got coffee and we sat down and I told him, I said, hey, here's my situation. I feel like I'm supposed to start a church, but I keep begging God just to give me something, to give me a word, just to say, do this. And I'm not hearing from God and I'm just scared. I don't know what to do. I don't have answers. Like, what if I get fired from my job? What if I don't have insurance? And Clayton says to me, Rob, maybe the reason that God hasn't given you an answer is because He trusts you to make the right answer. And I don't know if you're sitting here tonight and you have something that you're wrestling with and you've been begging God to give you an answer, and hopefully you've gone to the Bible first and you've looked for an answer, but God hasn't given you an answer in the Bible. He didn't tell you you should quit your job and go get another job. He didn't tell you you should go back to school or what school to pick or what career to go to or if you should marry the person you're dating. He hasn't given you those answers in the Bible, and so you've prayed and you just want to hear a still small voice, and maybe you've heard a still small voice other times in your life, but for some reason God is silent. In those moments, I'm just wondering if maybe, instead of being afraid, you should just say, man, God, I'm going to trust you and make a move. Let's keep reading the story with Elijah and see what happens next. Then he lay down, talking about Elijah, under the bush, and he fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, get up and eat. He looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you. So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and he spent the night. So this is what happens in the story. Elijah's laid down. He's asked God to take his life. Instead of God taking his life, God provides an angel. And the angel provides for him a little bit of food. It's bread. I'm betting it was angel food. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know. And he provides for him water. And he says, eat this because you have a long journey ahead. Now, Elijah doesn't have an answer. He just knows that he's going to meet God at the mountain of God called Horeb. And he says, you got to eat this because your journey is long. And then did you notice how long Elijah traveled? He traveled for 40 days and 40 nights. And I'm just throwing this out there that if you're here today and there's something that you're wrestling with and you haven't heard from God, like, don't give up. Because maybe the message that God is telling you is God's just telling you to go. Did you catch the message that the angel said? He said, go to the mountain of God. And here's what I found. When God is silent in the Bible and He doesn't tell us what to do, and when we don't hear the still small voice, I believe that God is telling you to go until He says no. God's telling you to go. If you have a desire inside of you that just doesn't make sense and you're like, I don't know why I would want to change fields at this point in my life. I don't know why I would want to go here. I didn't know why I felt this desire to start a church. It didn't make any sense. I didn't have all the gifts and talents to start a church. I didn't have the funding. I didn't have any reasons. It just didn't make sense, but I couldn't shake this. And then it was that little angel that I had coffee with named Clayton King who said, maybe God is just trusting you to make the right decision. It was all I needed just to say, okay, I'm going to go until God says no. I'm going to jump out there. I'm going to have one conversation after the next and just see where this thing goes. And if God closes the door, if He slams the door, then maybe I can know, okay, that wasn't the direction that I went. But until God slams that door, I'm just going to keep going through the doors that He opens. So we started a church with no funding and no people. And I just thank God that I kept going and that He hasn't said no yet. And I wonder if it's the same thing for you. If you have a situation right now that you're wrestling with, maybe you need to hear a little angel that is saying to you, you need to just go until God says no. Well, Elijah goes and he travels for 40 days and 40 nights and he gets to the mountain of God and then God speaks to him. Let's look at what God says there. It says, and the word of the Lord came to him. What are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, talking about Elijah, I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. The Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mount of the cave. Then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? So Elijah gets to the mountain of God and he hears God speak. And we don't know if it's in a still small voice or if it was audible. But did you catch what God said to him? God said, what are you doing here? Now, I read that and I think that either God has a sense of humor or He's a jerk. And I don't feel comfortable saying that God's a jerk, so I just want to hope that He has a sense of humor. Like, what do you mean, what am I doing here, God? I went and asked you to kill me, and instead of killing me, you sent me an angel who force-fed me angel food, and then He said, get up and go to the mountain of God. That's why I'm here. You know the answer. I'm here for you. I'm trying to follow you. I'm trying to do what you want me to do. What do you mean, what am I doing here? And then Elijah gives him his sob story, and he tells him, hey, remember all the prophets that I killed? Well, now Jezebel's after my life, and they're going to kill me, and like I'm really scared. And then all of a sudden God says, all right, get ready, I'm about to speak. And this big wind blows, and the wind is so strong it cracks the mountain. That's a serious wind. But God wasn't in the wind. And then he feels this earthquake, and surely God's going to be in the earthquake. But God wasn't in the earthquake. And then came a fire, and it's like, okay, this is it. God's got to be in the fire. God is a consuming fire. All throughout the Bible, like fire and God are like together. Like it's an example of God. Like when God spoke to Moses, it was in a burning bush. And like sometimes in my life, I just wish that God would speak to me in something on fire. Like I wish I could wake up and my dresser would be on fire and it would be like, Rob, eat Cheerios for breakfast. I'm like, oh yes, I know what to do now. God's speaking through the fire. But God wasn't in the fire. I often wish that God would speak in a loud, booming voice. I don't know if you are fans or if you grew up playing the classic arcade game NBA Jam, but I often wish that God spoke like the announcers on NBA Jam. If you're not familiar with the game, it was an amazing game where you're playing basketball. It was 2-on-2. And one of my goals every time I played this game was to dunk the basketball enough that in the fourth quarter, the announcer would proclaim,
boom shakalaka!
That's what I was going for. Boom shakalaka. It's what you wanted the announcer to hear. And then there was another thing that the announcer would proclaim that was just awesome. If you hit 3 shots in a row without the other team scoring, the announcer would declare,
he's on fire!
He's on fire! It was awesome. It was like you wanted to hear the announcer yell that. And wouldn't it be great in life if you're trying to make a decision and you like walk through a door and it's like all of a sudden God speaks and he says,
boom shakalaka!
It's like, yeah, all right, I'm going the right way. You spoke. I know what you said to do. I'm not afraid anymore. And then after you made three right decisions in a row, wouldn't it be awesome if God said,
"He's on fire"?
That would be awesome. But here's the deal with God. God is God, and He doesn't work the way that we want Him to work. And God wasn't in the loud wind, and He wasn't in the loud earthquake, and God wasn't in the loud fire. Did you catch how God spoke? He spoke in a whisper. And what did He say to Elijah a second time? "What are you doing here? Elijah, what are you doing here? Why are you here? I know you're looking for some direction. I know you don't know what to go, but I trust you. Why are you wasting your life standing right here? You need to take a risk. You need to jump. You need to believe that I am the God who can do measurably more than you ask or imagine. What are you doing here?" And some of you have a dream that's just been inside of you for a long time, and you've just been saying, "Well, if God would just tell me what to do," and God hasn't said no, so I would say maybe God's saying to you, "What are you doing here? Why are you still praying about this? Why are you still asking people's opinion? Why are you stressing? Why are you losing sleep? What are you doing here? You need to just go. You need to take action and believe that I am the God who can do immeasurably more than you could ever ask or imagine. What are you doing here?" Tonight, if you are not wrestling with a God-sized task or a dream, then I simply would challenge you with it. You need to take a risk and just ask God to move in your life. You just need to seek God. You need to go to the mountain of God and say, "Hey, God, what is your plan for me? I don't feel you in my life. I haven't sensed you. I've never asked you even what I should do. I just picked something. For me, I just picked a degree. I was like, which degree has no math in it in college? It was youth ministry. So I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. Maybe that's how you picked your degree. Maybe that's how you picked your job. But have you ever sat down and just said, "God, I want to seek you. Tell me what to do. What direction?" And maybe God will speak to you in a still, small voice. Maybe God will speak to you in a booming voice. Maybe He'll point you back to the Bible and say, "Hey, I've already told you to do that." Like, you don't need to pray about should you tell someone about Jesus. You don't need to ask God about that. He's already told us that we need to tell people about Jesus. So just do it. Don't pray about it. Just do it. But if you have a situation where God hasn't spoke and you're wrestling, maybe God is whispering to you tonight, "What are you doing here?" Because there's some of you that you are wrestling with something, and maybe you're like me, and you wrestled with it for a year and a half, and you just need a little angel just to say to you, "God's trusting you. Get up. Go. What are you doing here?" Will you pray with me? God, we come before you right now. And God, I have no idea if there's anyone even here that is wrestling with a decision or a task for you. But I ask, God, that you would do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine, that you would speak to our hearts. God, that you would stir something inside of us that would just say, "We need to move. We need to take action. It is too great a risk just to sit here and not do anything." So I ask, God, that you would give us the courage to obey you even when it's hard. I ask, God, that you would give us the will to lay down our lives and say, "Wherever you lead us, God, it's your will, it's your way. God, if you tell me to jump, I'll ask how high. If you tell me to move, we'll move. If you tell me to sell everything, I'll sell everything. God, no matter what you say, we just want to hear from you. And until you do, we're going to go. Until you say no." In Jesus' name, amen.